In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
You might remember that in 2016, a conservative political outsider got elected, who, once he was sworn in, actually started to work on fulfilling his campaign promises. But doing that got him in trouble with the other political party, and even with people in his own party. And the so-called justice system got involved and started an investigation relying on lies and falsified evidence. Except who you're thinking about probably isn't the person I'm talking about. But we'll come back around to that. This week, you're going to hear exactly why it is so important to elect the right people, and not just at the top of the ticket, but all the way down to the bottom. Mayors, city councilors, people like judges and district attorneys. We all know that presidents and governors get to appoint hundreds of people to positions of authority, and that's critical because those are the people making sure that the elected leader's vision gets accomplished. But there are people under those appointed that can and will cause a lot of damage, the bureaucrats. A good leader needs to appoint other good leaders who will ensure that everyone is on the same page and not trying to gum up the works. We've seen for years, well over a decade, the abuse at the Justice Department and the FBI. The FBI has and will continue to try to set people up, entrap them. And if that doesn't work, they'll go after you for lying, by hoping to trip you up as you try to explain the truth of what really happened. This is the weaponization of law enforcement, because the law doesn't matter. It's who is enforcing the law. Because if you don't do a crime, the FBI, the DIJ, or, as you'll hear on today's show, elected district attorney prosecutors will invent a crime. And then good luck trying to prove something didn't happen when they control the evidence, when they control the rules, and when they have unlimited government funds to drag things out as they drag you through the mud. That's not America. And it's time people are held accountable by removing them from office. You've heard the expression that elections have consequences. Well, I hope today's show convinces you of that more than ever. Skipping ahead now to our second guest, Bridget Barton, a Republican candidate for governor. I'd like to welcome Bridget Barton to the show. She is a conservative writer and businesswoman who for over 30 years has advocated for conservative solutions to Oregon's problems. She is also a Republican candidate for Oregon's governor. Bridget, it's great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, you're a writer and a businesswoman. So tell us about the magazine that you had started back in the late 90s, Brainstorm Northwest. What led you to start that, and what solutions to problems were you advocating?
Well, this is a good lead into why I'm running for governor. Because actually, even back in 1997, some of the more prominent private business owners, or big private companies around the state, were starting to notice that the powers that be in government were taking on a very anti-business attitude. And they felt that they didn't have a voice. Because if you think back to 97, this was before Fox News. This was before Lars had his show really going on the air. There was really no conservative media in the state. And it was at this point, actually, that media started to kind of split between being conservative or liberal. And the only thing out there really was the Oregonian. And that was beginning to take this kind of negative attitude towards business and natural resources in particular. So a lot of these private business owners around the state came together and decided they would support our pro-business, pro-conservative ideas magazine, just so that there could be at least one voice in the state that was advocating a positive business climate, a positive economic growth climate, and kind of looking out for rural Oregon and blue-collar Oregon, too. And it turns out that they were very prescient in their views. They were correct. Things were turning. So yeah. We had that business, and the magazine was around from 1997 till just after the recession, at which point we took it just virtual online as a newsletter. And, you know, it was an important voice in the state to get ideas and solutions out there.
So that was in the late 90s when Republicans really started to lose ground across the state. And I'm guessing the powers that were didn't exactly listen to you the way that they ought to have, considering the slide that we had. So what was the reception like to your solutions then versus how those same kind of solutions are received today?
I think you can easily look back and see that the Democrats began to take more and more control mm-hmm. over state government. We haven't had a Republican governor since the mid-80s, so it's been almost 40 years. And the reception we got then was warmer. It got icier and icier as time mm-hmm. went along. But at the same time, my business partner and I we began to be looked to as the voice for conservative ideas. So because of that, I've had a lot of experience with media, being on TV, on radio, responding to press inquiries. You know, when anybody needed to get the conservative voice, they would often call our office and say, do you have a comment? Or, you know, what do you think about this policy coming through? And, you know, we maintain sort of that position. But as you well know, the Democrats have taken a stronger and stronger grip over state government over the years. And in the last 10 years, the public has started to see the results of this. It's been like a snowball rolling downhill, gaining momentum in the last 10 years. And the very progressive left wing of the Democrat Party has almost taken this state off a cliff.
Yes.
To the point where regular people they say, what happened to the state?
Yeah.
You know, and they're so frustrated about what they options they can do to fix things. And they're, you know, in rural Oregon, it's to the level of outright anger. There's no other way to describe it.
Yeah.
It's outright anger.
Yeah.
We're getting that even now in the urban areas over certain issues like the schools and the homeless crisis and the rising crime rate. There is growing anger, and it's cross-partisan divide. These are not partisan issues.
Well, what I have
liked everyone.
Yeah, what I have liked to see too is that people are finally starting to wake up that this isn't just a problem out there. This is a problem caused by the people that are in office right now. I think that's a real opportunity for Republicans this time around.
It absolutely is. There's no other way to see it if you have your eyes open than to realize that we've had the same party in power for 40 years and at every level of the state, the higher state offices. So they really are in a very bad position this cycle, to put it mildly. And while there is going to be a national red wave, here in Oregon, it's more about these very sort of kitchen table ground level issues that it isn't even about red or blue or Democrat or Republican. They have woken up and realized whoever's running this state, and it happens to be the Democrats, they are doing a terrible job. So I'm coming in as an outsider and saying I'm the problem solver, and I am going to hold Tina Kotek and Betsy Johnson, both Democrats, I'm going to hold them accountable for the mess they've made of this state. Period. We are not going to get distracted onto partisan issues. We're going to talk about the mess they've made of this state and hold them accountable. I will come in and put a hard stop to those policies and begin to turn the state around on some of these very core problem issues that affect everybody.
Yes,
they affect everyone.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you talk about a red wave there, and I think that's possible. But of course, Oregon tends to be different sometimes. It's one thing to say, oh, gosh, these Democrats are doing a horrible job. It's another thing to actually vote against Democrats and vote them out of office. So what do you think it will take for Oregonians to pull the trigger for Republicans?
Well, I look back to, speaking of the red wave, you look back to the last time we had one, which was the year that Chris Dudley ran. And he lost by only 22,000 votes in a two-way kind of standard Republican-Democrat race. The issues on the table were similar, but they weren't nearly as bad as they are now, not even close. And so, now that was 2010. and come forward another 12 years, and the damage done by the liberals, the left in power, is so much more significant. And we add to that that it will be a three-way race. So the Republican that is nominated, I think I would be the best possible nominee because I am a conservative Republican. I'm wanting to solve these issues, and I'm wanting to deal with the problems that the actual people out there in Oregon are having to deal with every day. But I will be able, as I said, to hold the left accountable for the mess. So they are going to have to fight over the Democrat votes.
Right.
Between Betsy Johnson and Tina Kotek.
And as long as Republicans stay solid and don't desert and don't defect to Betsy Johnson, because, at least she's not as bad as Tina Kotek, I think Republicans can win. All right, everyone, take a break. Coming up, we talk about the solutions to Oregon's problems. We're talking with Bridget Barton. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today with Bridget Barton. She is a businesswoman and a conservative writer who's been focused on conservative solutions to the problems here in Oregon. She's also a Republican candidate for governor. And, we're talking about the possibility of a red wave there. And I have always been political and, I had an interest in politics going way back to elementary school days. Although I did not become actively involved with the party until 2009. And aside from Reagan, I have always thought Republicans have had a terrible time with the communication end of things, communicating their message on issues, communicating their ideas and solutions. So why is it, do you think, that Republicans tend to be so terrible on the communication end?
Oh, I'm not 100% sure, but I can tell you one thing. When I was asked to join this race and asked to run for governor, one of the things that this network of people that came to me said is, you have experience with the media and in communications. And oftentimes I think we fall back on the same old tired faces and people who they have legislative experience, but they've never actually done communication with the public. And the left is better at putting forward people that have, for lack of a better word, more polish on communication. So I think, again, it's an asset that I will bring. It's important, not just for campaigning. It's important, as we saw, for example, with Ronald Reagan, it's important to be able to have strong communication skills when you're in office.
Right, exactly.
I think it's one of Kate Brown's biggest failings, and I don't think it's an asset that Tina Kotek has.
She doesn't need to communicate. She just tells you what to do, and you're expected to do it. So why bother to communicate? So you mentioned, though, the issue of once you're in government and the importance of communications. And, managing the state is a huge task because it's a huge organization with thousands of workers. You obviously haven't run the government before, but do you have a human resource experience managing large-scale organizations? Or asking that another way, what makes you confident that you could tackle the quagmire that is the government of the state of Oregon?
Oh, boy, and is it a quagmire. I do have background managing staffs, a fairly large staff in the past, and it's always been something I've enjoyed doing. I think my communication style, I'm very direct, very clear, very straightforward about establishing a vision. I'm good at delegating, and I think probably one of the most important skills that the governor needs to have is selecting a very strong team around them. And you know what? Not being afraid of hiring and you delegating to other very strong people. I like to surround myself with other strong people and build a really solid team. So going forward, you're right. It's going to, the best comparison, I hate to bring up the Trump word, but I will, when he got into office, the assault on him throughout that 4 years was unrelenting.
Absolutely.
And just vicious, vicious. Now, after 40 years of Democrat control, if a Republican takes office, they should expect to get a very strong backlash. And I expect it. I will be ready for it. It's going to be part of the job to deal with it. And I think that my very clear, strong communication style is going to be helpful. The other thing that'll be helpful is I enjoy communicating with large groups of people. I enjoy traveling the state. Unlike our current governor, I will be a very visible governor. I will be out there with the media. I'm not afraid to be with them, to talk with them, even if they're adversarial. I'm ready to communicate my vision and my messages about where we're heading with the state across the whole state to all the media around the state. And I've been doing that throughout this campaign, too. I haven't turned down any interviews. Right. I enjoy doing them.
Well, I'd like to drill down a little bit on that, the notion of the importance of having a team and also the viciousness that you would face, because, you know, running your own magazine or anyone that's out there running their own business, pretty much the people that are there are all going to be on the same side with similar goals. You know, most workers are going to want the head of the organization to succeed. But stepping into the reins of the governor's office, you're obviously going to have a lot, if not most, of the people opposed to you. Your goals mm-hmm. and your politics and everything else. So how would you get people to work together to make your goals succeed? And maybe you have an example you could point to where you've done that in the past.
Well, I'll just go straight to the first answer, part of the answer first, which is to say, you know, I think you have to understand, I do understand what my position will be power-wise vis-a-vis the Democrats when I get into the office. So I have to know, be clearly aware of what my PowerPoints are. So what I have is the opportunity to appoint up to 300 people on boards, commissions, mm-hmm. and heads of agencies. And I also will have the power of the veto pen and the line item veto pen on spending bills. So those need to kind of be used together. And I also have the bully pulpit, which I'm, again, not afraid to use strongly, loudly, consistently. But those appointments are probably the key point, because I'll take the first one that I would do, and that is I would appoint a new deputy superintendent of public instruction. And that from that person, I would execute my vision, my policies, my idea for what the public school goals and potential should be. And for me, that is to rid the schools of any ideological agenda at all. Any sort of some of this stuff that's being pumped into the kids that has nothing to do with academics. My vision, my goal is academic excellence. So we'll bring back standards. And the person I hire at the top will be responsible for then delegating down and hiring people below them. And anyone in the Department of Education who isn't interested in being a part of that vision, that's fine, but then we'll need to find a new job.
Yeah, I was going to say
that's going to be the vision.
Yep, there's lots of other jobs out there. So, all right, let's go and take a break there. We'll wrap things up with Bridget Barton. Her website is bridgetbartonfororegon.com. That's fororegon.com. We'll link that up on ispireradio.com as well to make that easier to find. Stay with us. Back in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show, we're talking with Bridget Barton. She's a businesswoman, writer, and conservative outsider running for Oregon's governor as a Republican. And her website, one more time, bridgetbartonfororegon.com, and the four is F-O-R. So, Bridget, what do you think sets you apart from other candidates? Why should voters choose you over someone else?
Well, again, I come in as an outsider, have no baggage. And so I don't owe anyone anything, so I can do anything. And it's also in this particular cycle, this is important. I have no aspirations for a long-term political career. I'm 69 years old, so I have nothing to lose. And so everything's going to be on the table. I'm really going to be able to push back hard. And I say always out there on the campaign trail, I'm running to put a hard stop to our 40-year decline and really make some headway on these kitchen table issues. And, you know, one in particular that I have some unique expertise on is the homelessness issue, because I'm 40 years in recovery from alcoholism myself. And so, you know, I started drinking when I was 14. I stopped when I was 28, and I was very near homelessness myself. So when I go out and see these thousands of homeless people on the streets, I understand from my core that what we're doing is not compassionate. It is enabling people to commit slow suicide on our streets right before our eyes. It is inhumane behavior. And our policy of housing first is an absolute total failure. And our elected officials have utterly failed to address this problem. So I have a very clear plan. I think we need to flip the model. We need to create a database so that law enforcement can clear our streets and put these people into low barrier shelters. And at that point, they need to go into treatment. But as you probably know, we're number 2 in the country in substance abuse per capita, but we are number 50 in treatment beds per capita. After spending billions of dollars, we have not created any treatment. So we have a substance abuse problem. We don't have a homeless problem or a housing problem. It's a substance abuse problem. I also think an incredibly important component to solving this problem is the repeal of ballot measure 110, which I would try to organize in my first year in office by pulling together law enforcement, parents groups around the state that are horrified at these drugs that are coming in, and the treatment community, which also found Measure 110 abhorrent. So those forces, if we bring them together, I think we can go to the voters and ask for a repeal of this measure. The law enforcement community says crime, substance abuse, homelessness, they are intertwined. And if that's the reason we have the soaring crime rate that we have is the substance abuse problem, which creates the homeless problem. And if we don't repeal that measure and get to the bottom of this and get people into treatment, real treatment, the state is going down. That comes from the mouths of law enforcement across the state. So this is a very serious problem for the state. It's an intertwined problem. And of all the candidates, I have this unique expertise and experience to bring to bear on it. I've been on the board of DePaul Treatment Center in downtown Portland for years.
Yeah, I was going to say, you beat me to it, because that was one of the things I was going to ask you about, was you dealing with 40 years of recovery, because that is obviously going to give you a real insight into these kinds of issues. As far as the prescriptions that you've outlined here, have you seen those kinds of treatments and addressing these issues because of the addiction issues? Have you seen those work in other cities or states?
Yes, of course. In fact, I just find it shocking that we haven't gotten to this point already, because if everybody travels to other states occasionally, and if you go to other states and communities, you come back and come back to Oregon, you think, why can't we be like those other states?
Right.
Why aren't we like Idaho, or why aren't we like San Diego? Where you go to San Diego, well, San Francisco and LA might look like hell, but the city of San Diego has a different way of dealing with it. They get the people off the streets right away.
Well, see, that's the next question then, is why aren't we doing those things that clearly are working in other states?
Because we have 40 years of Democrats in power who don't seem to find any incentive to get this done. And I will say, I'm going to be more cynical than that and tell you this. We have created what I call the homeless industrial complex. There, all this billions of dollars in bonds and taxes that we've approved to help, so-called help the homeless, the most recent one being Measure 110, this money all goes into new government jobs, new grants to new nonprofits, more and more money cycling into people that don't need help. They just want work and money. And anyone who's ever taken an economics class will tell you, what we've created is a reverse incentive to solve the problem. If your job is homeless advocacy, you know, out of the state government somehow, if you solve the problem, you're out of a job. Well, I don't think it's quite as direct as that, but that is the truth. There is no incentive for these people to actually solve the problem. They just go out and keep recycling through the same people. Anybody who's had anything to do with anyone with a substance abuse problem will tell you, you've got to slam a hard stop in front of those people over and over again to get to make any headway. And the last thing you would do is hand them keys to a house.
Yeah, and that's just insane. Bridget, I want to thank you so much for your time. This has been really enlightening. Her website, one more time,
thank you,
is BridgetBartonForOregon.com. That's FOR4Oregon.com. We'll link that up on iSpy Radio. www.bridgetmcgee.com on today's show page as well to make that easier to find. Bridget, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me and giving me a chance to talk to voters.
So after our interview with Kim Herman, I looked up what, if anything, had happened to the Missouri prosecutor because I knew that she had had a scheduled disciplinary hearing rescheduled. And I found this from Fox 2 Now. Gardner, quote, acknowledges that she made mistakes in her handling of the prosecution of former Missouri Governor Eric Greitens, but won't face severe penalties for those mistakes. The joint stipulation agreement was announced just as a disciplinary hearing for Gardner was about to begin. It calls for no suspension, no probation, or disbarment. Unbelievable. 62 acts of misconduct that resulted in 79 false representations, and she gets off with a slap on the wrist. And that's the problem, isn't it? People inside the system are held to a lower standard when it should be a higher one. She's a flippin' attorney, a prosecutor. She knew what she was doing was wrong and did it anyway. The only way this gets fixed is removing the people who are elected and putting in new ones who will hold people, all people, accountable when they violate the law. Otherwise, we don't have laws, we don't have a justice system, we have a popularity system. Pay attention to how you vote and for whom you vote, because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.